thank you all for coming. I'm delighted to be here. I love Hawaii. And I have a second home here, and we hope someday that we'll be able to retire in Kauai. So obviously I really care about the health of that island and the whole Hawaiian Islands. Here's the title of my talk, GMOs and Roundup, a destructive combination, and I really believe this, and I hope that you will all believe this too when I finish my presentation. Have to turn this on. So I love this quote from Mahatma Gandhi. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you. We're here, then they fight you. Right now they're fighting us. And then we're going to get to this one soon, I hope. We have to, for the safety of our children. Here's an outline of my talk. I'm going to start with the autism epidemic. That's where I started. I've been studying autism now for several years. I've written several papers on it. I know environmental factors are causing it, and I think it's several environmental factors, and all of it has to do with all the toxins that are in our environment. And I've learned a lot about autism before I thought to look at glyphosate. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup. And I didn't think of that at first because it's quote-unquote harmless. It's like aspirin. I mean, if you read Monsanto, they tell you, you know, this stuff you could practically drink it and it wouldn't hurt you. Actually, people commit suicide by drinking it. So once I started looking at Roundup, I hit pay dirt. And I'll show you that coming forward. So gut microbes and glyphosate, that's a huge thing. Gut microbes are really, really important to our health, and we're messing them up with this chemical. GMO crops, of course, have, you know, the Monsanto folks say they're equivalent. I'm going to show you that it's not true. I'm going to give you a bunch of different statistics that you're going to find to be quite remarkable, I think. Then I'm going to get into some of the serious things that I think glyphosate is causing, among the other chemicals in your environment, endocrine disruption and cancer. And then my most painful topic is new GMO research happening on my treasured island, Kauai. And then a summary. Okay, autism epidemic, here we are in the U.S., 2007. By that time, I was already quite worried about autism because I saw the rates were rising and I didn't understand why. And I thought, somebody's got to figure this out. One in 150 in 2007. A new number, 2009, one in 100. And then shockingly, just recently, March 2013, one in 50. This number came and went, you know, nobody really talked about it. Okay, fine, one in 50. I mean, where are we headed? This is where we're headed, one in two. If you do the math. So imagine a world in which half the kids have autism. I think this is a very, very serious problem. 1970, before glyphosate appeared, one in 10,000. So think about that. Now, what is autism? I imagine most of you know what autism is. It's a neurodevelopmental disorder. It causes inability to socialize properly, to communicate properly with other people, delayed language development. The most severe cases are severely disabled. They require full-time, lifetime care. It's extremely expensive, therefore, to take care of them. And it is, as we get more and more kids with this syndrome, we're going to have an overwhelming burden in our society. So here's some of the things that I found when I was studying it. Clearly disrupted gut bacteria. Lots of people say that. They've got an inflamed gut. They've got overgrowth of pathogens. They've got leaky gut. They get colitis. They have to avoid wheat and avoid milk products. They put them on all kinds of special diets. It's clear that their digestive system is in big trouble. Serotonin is an amazing neurotransmitter, an amazing molecule that does a lot of important things to your body. And it's deficient not only in autism, but as you'll see later, a whole bunch of other things, all of which are on the rise in our today. And then sulfur is actually my thing, and I have really pushed sulfur. And Hesh shares this with me, and we really believe in sulfur as a key nutrient for health that has been derailed in so many ways in the way we live today. It's unbelievable. So I think that all of us are suffering from a sulfur deficiency. And this has huge consequences. When you start looking at what sulfur does in the body, you wonder that we can even survive with the program that we have in place right now. And especially sulfate. Sulfate is a molecule that contains sulfur and also contains four oxygen molecules. And it's a very, very interesting molecule that I've studied extensively and that I think is absolutely essential to the functioning of the blood as well as the brain and the heart. And so really, really critical parts of the body, the muscle system, all of these things critically depend upon sulfate to work properly. And sulfate is severely deficient in autism. And in fact, a rats, study on rats, they have all these designers, rats they can create with these biologists that have a pretty amazing repertoire of things they can do. And they made these rats that were unable to synthesize a specific molecule called heparin sulfate in the brain. And these rats developed a syndrome that was exactly like autism. It's basically rat autism because of this one deficiency in not being able to make this molecule in the brain, which is a really big clue that sulfate is a problem in autism. So here's my question. Is there a toxic substance that's currently on the rise in our environment that could account for these comorbidities, these other things that are showing up in context along with the autism symptoms? And of course, this is the one. I'm almost certain. Pick one, this is it. You know, the other ones are all helping it along and making things worse, but this is the star of this problem. And if we don't solve this, we're going to have a situation where we're spending all of our time taking care of our autistic kids. Not a pretty picture. So we published this paper. I actually heard a talk by Don Huber. He's a wonderful guy. He's a retired professor from Purdue, and he has spent all of his life studying plant pathology and plant physiology, and he has come to realize that glyphosate is a huge problem. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in Roundup, and I attended a talk last year where he talked for 2 hours on glyphosate and all the different ways that he shows that it disrupts plants, disrupts microbes, disrupts animals, and in vitro experiments, all kinds of data. And I was at the edge of my seat because all of a sudden I said, oh my God, this is what explains all these things I'm seeing in autism that I can't explain. So I was really dumbfounded. I went back and I read everything I could find on this toxic chemical. And I hooked up with this guy, Anthony Samsel, who's an amazing person. And he has been studying glyphosate for many years. And he had already been convinced that it was a huge problem. And so he and I put together this paper that we published in Entropy. Entropy is an open access journal, which means you all can read this paper. You don't have to pay $40. And I refuse to publish in any journal that's not open access anymore, because I think it's unfair to not allow the general public to see the work that you're doing. And of course, I got criticized for this because these Monsanto folks say that this is a vanity journal. You know, so you just pay money, you get your paper published. And that's not true at all. This is a whole different model for publication that I think is going to rescue us, because these open access journals are publishing stuff that the other ones don't dare publish because of the ownership, the operation of these companies of controlling what they can say. And so this went through very rigorous review, two rounds of review with three reviewers, extensive modifications and extensive improvements. This paper was really looked over by experts, so I feel very confident that it's worth reading. good material. Okay, so that's the paper, and then it luckily got picked up by Reuters, and it got distributed around the world, quite a bit of visibility. I was really excited about that, even in China, for example. And of course, there were also pushback from the Monsanto cronies. So here's a food science bogus paper, that's our paper, on Roundup saturates the internet. I was very pleased about the second half of that. I hope it's true. So, but anyway. So now I'm going to tell you some of the things that are in that paper, and I'm going to have to do it kind of light because the paper's difficult if you don't have, you know, biology degrees. But you're welcome to take a look at it. I think there's definitely material in there you could appreciate. Glyphosate is now the number one herbicide in use in the U.S. and increasingly throughout the world. It was developed as a bit of history. Patented by Monsanto in the 1970s, and that's a good number to pay attention to because that's when we started getting a lot of different health problems. It came up under patent in 2000, and that's when it started getting distributed widely all over the world. China picked up on it because other companies could produce it cheap, and the price came down, and more people were inclined to choose this herbicide over something else because it was cheap. So the growth has been enormous in the usage of this herbicide since 2000. Now, what does glyphosate do? It inhibits an enzyme in something called the shikimate pathway, which probably none of you have heard of this pathway. It's involved in the synthesis of three very important amino acids, tyrosine, tryptophan, and phenylalanine. These are called aromatic amino acids, and they are absolutely crucial to our well-being. And we don't have this pathway, which means we don't synthesize them. So if we're going to get those nutrients, we have to get them from either plants or microbes, because those are the ones that can make them. And they make them using this pathway. So keep that in mind. So huge expansion of GMO corn, soy, cotton, and this is cottonseed oil, as Hess mentioned, and canola. And that's led to sharp increases in the last decade in the use of Roundup on our food crops, on our major food crops that go into our processed food industry. So this is the big question, is glyphosate non-toxic? I'm imagining most of you maybe think that it's not, and I certainly think that. They've argued that it's non-toxic specifically because we don't have this pathway. So it disrupts this pathway that we don't have, so what harm could it possibly do to us? That's the logic. But, as I said, our gut bacteria do have this pathway, and they're the ones that are going to give us those amino acids that are essential to us for our survival. So there's other stuff in Roundup that's under patent. You can't even really know what it is, but there's things like surfactants. These things enable the Roundup to get into the cell, and they make the Roundup much more toxic than it would otherwise, make the glyphosate much more toxic than it would otherwise be. They get the glyphosate into the cell and do the damage. Now, the really scary thing about glyphosate, in my opinion, is that you don't see the problem right away. It's not like you suddenly get a violently ill or, you know, a big headache or something like that. You don't really perceive that anything has happened to you. But what it's doing is slowly taking away critical nutrients. And it's also so that over time, you become very, very deficient in things that are critical to your health. So it takes 3 or 4 months before you notice anything. And so the trick is, if you're Monsanto, you just do your experiments for 3 months. You know, and cut them off before you see the damage. And then you can claim that it's non-toxic. So I think that's what's happened. I think that it's gotten through the review process as a consequence of the fact that it takes it a long time to reveal its deadly weapons. All the studies, in fact, that I'm aware of that Monsanto and those folks have done have been have been 3 months or less. So here's some of the biological effects, aside from the main one, which is the aromatic amino acids that I mentioned before, which is going to then seriously disrupt the gut bacteria because they need those amino acids, they need that whole pathway in order to function properly, and particularly the good guys need it. So the beneficial bacteria get preferentially killed by the glyphosate that's infecting your gut, and then the pathogens overgrow. As a consequence, so they take over and they cause a huge amount of problems. Things like C. diff and Pseudomonas and all these kinds of toxic bacteria that are going to release toxic toxins into your blood and cause you a lot of difficulty. So there's this enzyme. Oops, oh dear, that wasn't good. Sorry. There's this enzyme class called cytochrome P450 enzymes. You can call them CYPE enzymes for short, that's easier. And they're an amazing set of enzymes that do a lot of really important things in your body. And glyphosate disrupts the function of those enzymes. And so that's going to cause a whole other set of problems in your body besides the problem with the gut bacteria. It also depletes important minerals in the plant, which means that when you eat the plant, you don't get those minerals. Things like calcium, manganese, zinc, cobalt, and iron. These are all, some of them are micronutrients that you only need them in small amounts, but if you don't have those small amounts, you're in big trouble. So you get dangerously depleted. In fact, autism, as I will say later, has a depletion in zinc and iron problem. So now this one, sulfate synthesis and sulfate transport, we talk a lot about that in the paper, and we show how glyphosate would cause these problems. In other words, the sulfate that you're eating You can't get it into your body because of the glyphosate. And then your body can synthesize sulfate, but glyphosate disrupts that process. So you're depleting sulfate both because you can't synthesize it and you can't transport it. And I'm not going to describe how that works because it's complicated, but if you want to know more, you should read my paper. Read our paper. Okay, so now I want to say more about these two. I just mentioned them before, and I'm going to elaborate on the, oops, I keep doing this, on the aromatic amino acids and the cytochrome P450 enzymes. So here's these aromatic amino acids. It also depletes methionine, and methionine is a key essential amino acid that supplies sulfur. There's only a few of these amino acids that have sulfur, and methionine is a very important one. So when you have reduced methionine, you get sulfur deficiency. Now, interestingly, this one, tryptophan, is the precursor to serotonin and melatonin. These may be words you've heard. These are very important molecules in our body. This one, melatonin, controls the sleep-wake cycle. So people who are having trouble sleeping probably have a melatonin deficiency. And serotonin is absolutely amazing, and we talked quite a bit about it in our paper. Definitely linked to autism, but also strongly linked to obesity, Alzheimer's disease, depression, and violent behavior, all of which are on the rise in our society today. So I think this is a very clear, obvious connection that you can make. If glyphosate is disrupting the sole precursor to serotonin, and people are getting all these diseases that are related to serotonin deficiency, it's pretty easy to connect the dots. Tyrosine, another one of these three, is a precursor to dopamine, adrenaline, and melanin. Again, three very, very important molecules in the body. Dopamine deficiency causes Parkinson's disease. Melanin is the pigment in the skin that protects from UV exposure. So our incidence of cancer in the skin has been going up by 3% every year since the 1970s. And I wonder, I can't prove this, but I wonder if it's due in part to the deficiency in melanin, which is a natural protection against UV exposure. And I mentioned methionine, essential sulfur-containing amino acid. It really sits at a very, very at the crossroads of two very, very important pathways in the body. And so when it's deficient, all kinds of bad things happen. I mentioned these P450, these CYP enzymes. And here's some of the things that they're involved in. Regulation of sterols, this is vitamin D, cholesterol, and the sex hormones, all very important things. Bile acid production, these are produced by the liver and fed into the gut to help you digest fats. So this will give you a problem with fat digestion. Detoxifying environmental toxins, I even emphasize that. That one's really, really important because these enzymes are what you use to break down things that you're exposed to, other things that you're exposed to. So when these enzymes are disrupted, these toxins linger longer in your body and do more damage. And this includes things like the insecticides or even acetaminophen, Tylenol. You know, Tylenol sticks around longer and can cause damage if these enzymes aren't working. And then this one's also very important, stabilizing the blood. We have a lot of our elderly who are walking a tight wire between hemorrhaging and blood clots, and they're taking, you know, rat poison, actually, this Coumadin. Lots of them are taking this stuff to try to walk that tightrope, and I think that it's a consequence of long-term exposure to glyphosate, potentially. So here's a whole list of things that we had found that were related to autism. I mentioned the gut bacteria, inflammatory bowel, low serum sulfate, methionine, these guys, these are all related to the glyphosate aromatic amino acids. This one, aromatase, is involved in converting testosterone to estrogen. So if it's broken, you have basically too much testosterone. And autism is much more common in boys than in girls. So the boys end up with too much testosterone and not enough estrogen. And that is a factor in autism. This is actually known to be deficient in autism, and it's a CYP enzyme. And these deficiencies I mentioned before, glyphosate depletes these. And then these are more complicated to explain, but the nitrate, ammonia come from the gut bacteria, and impaired immune function comes from the sulfur deficiencies. And then this inflammation in the brain comes originally from the inflammation in the gut, and it works its way to the brain. So nasty stuff. So basically all of these can be explained as potential effects of glyphosate on biological systems. Okay, to just summarize what I've just gone through, it's a lot of stuff. Autism rates have been increasing at an alarming rate in step with the increases in glyphosate application to GMO crops. associated with the disrupted gut bacteria, serotonin deficiency, impaired immune function, zinc, iron, and sulfur deficiency, etc. And most of these biomarkers associated with autism can be explained directly from the known biological functions of glyphosate. Okay, gut microbes. I like these quotes. I heard Dr. Roy Dittman speak at a conference last May, Autism One conference. It was a really great conference where people were really trying to understand what could possibly be causing this epidemic. Many, many patients of autism kids were there, and it was quite inspiring for me, all the work that people are doing to try to solve this problem. And he gave a wonderful talk emphasizing the importance of eating organic foods and getting rid of the processed foods, you know, and sort of how you can really heal your children through these methods. So he has this quote, "If the microbial world is the substrate for life, why are we waging war on it?" And I think that's a very good question to answer. The same chemicals we use to sterilize our environment sterilize us. We end up with reproductive problems when we're exposed to these chemicals that are sterilizing our environment. So gut microbes and obesity, direct link. So first of all, the microbes, people are now realizing that the gut microbes are incredibly important to our health and that we need to take good care of them. A lot of people are doing probiotics, you know, and trying to avoid taking antibiotics, which can really mess them up. Each person has between 200 and 300 different species, and the species that each person has is an individual profile. And glyphosate causes an overgrowth of the pathogens, which then release something called toxic phenols, and this in turn can lead to inflammatory bowel disease. And this also is a direct path to obesity. So, in fact, there was an interesting experiment that was done in this paper where the microbes from an obese person were introduced into mice guts, and those mice became obese after being exposed to those microbes. So clearly there's something in that message that those microbes are sending out to the body that causes the body to want to gain weight. Okay, so this is a paper that just showed up. This is 2013. It showed up after we wrote our paper. I was really pleased to see it because it was involving a study on pigs. And it was inspired by observation of pigs that were being fed GMO crops and were having a lot of problems with their digestive system. So this was just anecdotally, they were being, they're increasingly getting more and more exposure to Roundup in their food because everything's becoming GMO that they eat. And so they were having inflammation in the stomach, stomach ulcers, thinning of the intestinal walls, and this hemorrhagic bowel disease, so all these different problems were showing up. So what they did was they took 168 pigs right after they were weaned, and they had two diets. Half of them were given soy and corn that was non-GMO, and the other half were given the GMO corn and soy. And this is what they found. They did blind autopsies, so the people didn't know which group the pig was in when they looked at the animals after the animal was killed. And the female pigs had a uterus that was 25% larger in the GMO-fed pigs, so an enlarged uterus. And they also had 2.2 times more likely to get severe stomach inflammation. And for the males, it was 4 times, so they had an even worse problem than the females. And here's a picture of the non-GMO versus the GMO feed of the guts, and you can see all this red is inflammation. So they've really got a lot of suffering going on there. Now, when you look at humans, you see lately more and more people talking about having various problems with their gut. Things like Crohn's disease. This is on the rise in children even. Inflammatory bowel, colitis, acid reflux, gluten, casein intolerance, leaky gut, all these things are showing up. And the gut-brain axis is really an interesting thing to study where the gut, if your gut's not healthy, your brain is going to become unhealthy too because all this stuff gets into the brain and causes the brain to do something very different from what it should normally be doing. And you can end up with depression or aggressive behavior or autism or Alzheimer's disease. All these problems can show up from this, from these things that are happening to the brain because of the problems in the gut. And I think glyphosate may be a major cause of these problems. So this is also a study that came out after our paper. A dramatic increase in hospitalization of children with inflammatory bowel disease, looking at 11 million hospitalization records. This is a huge amount of data. All the patients were under 20, And they looked from 2000 to 2009 at the data, and they saw a 49% increase in Crohn's disease and a 71% increase in ulcerative colitis. So clearly these things are going up in our children. Here's a bacterium called Pseudomonas. And it turns out there's only very few bacteria that can break down glyphosate completely. I've only been able to find these three in my search on the web. This one is quite interesting because it's a gram-negative bacterium that's become a major problem in the hospitals today. It's become resistant to multiple antibiotics, so it's one of those things you get an infection, you can't cure it. And I think it may be that it's becoming strong because of the glyphosate that's killing off everything else, but this bacterium can metabolize it. It can actually use it for fuel. And so it produces formaldehyde as a byproduct of glyphosate breakdown, which is a well-established neurotoxin, as well as a carcinogenic agent. There's a book that I just read, and in fact I have it here. I'll just show it to you. This is a great book if anybody wants to try to get it. It's called... America's Two-Headed Pig. It's a wonderful book, very accessible to the layperson. She's a daughter of a veterinarian who treats pigs in farms in the Midwest. And so he's been doing that all his life, and he's noticed all these changes in the pigs in recent times. And so that she talks in each chapter about a different problem that these pigs are having, including just like a failure to thrive. Something like 20% of the piglets, once they're weaned and put on this GMO diet, they just refuse to eat it and they die. And there's a lot of other things like paralysis in the legs and spinal inflammation, of course the gut problems with the inflammation in the gut. So our animals are really suffering from the food that they're being exposed to. Okay, recapitulation on this section. The gut microbes are very important for our health. Glyphosate causes the pathogens to overgrow and causes therefore lots of problems in the gut. The pigs, when they're fed a GMO diet, develop inflammation. These inflammatory bowel diseases are on the rise. And then this book that I highly recommend will describe all the problems that are happening with pigs. And so we can imagine that these same problems are going to happen to us as we continue to eat more and more foods that are exposed to these chemicals. The pigs, of course, are getting they have a much higher cutoff on how much is allowed, how much Roundup is allowed in the pig's diet compared to the human diet. So they're being much more generous in allowing them to be exposed to these toxins. Okay, GMO crops, are they equivalent? I like this picture from this website. Corporations have become the new gods of a fundamentalist religion, and they call it GMO, with this field of GMO corn very tightly growing and nothing else there. This is the whole idea that you just massively produce your one crop and get rid of every other thing that could be alive in that environment. Here's an interesting picture, which takes a moment to understand. This is two bags of corn that were left where mice were living. One was GMO, one was not. The mice dug into this bag and completely ate every bit of the kernels on this corn on the right, which was the non-GMO, and they didn't touch the GMO corn. They knew not to eat it. So I wish that we had whatever they have to be able to detect that there's something in that corn they don't want. So they're smart. Have GMOs worked? Here's a quote, which I would say suggests that they have not. Exactly none of the supposed benefits, which are increased yields, more food production, controlled pests and weeds, reduction in chemical use, drought-tolerant seeds. None of them has materialized. So this report says that GMOs have resulted in greater pesticide use and the emergence of herbicide-resistant superweeds. This is a huge problem right now, the growing problem. These weeds become resistant, and then you just put the glyphosate on the plant, and even the weed doesn't mind. It's going to grow just like your food crop. So you've got a big problem then. You can't use Roundup to kill those weeds. And so this says 130 different types in 40 states are now herbicide resistant, which increases the cost, cuts the yields, and yields leads to more powerful, increasingly toxic chemical herbicides. You have to start adding something else besides glyphosate, and this gets to be a really scary pathway. This is an article about India, and I think they've really become quite disillusioned with GMOs. They've created the super pests and the super weeds. Golden rice is 7,000 less efficient in providing vitamin A. So you start to look at the nutrients, and there's problems there. The bananas, 3,000% less efficient in providing iron, and that's again getting depleted by the glyphosate. And then the alternatives, India has a rich but rapidly disappearing biodiversity because you kill off everything else in sight. And then there's an intolerance of alternatives. They really do everything to try to prevent people from coming up with solutions that don't involve all these chemicals. And they're promoted as a religion in spite of the fact that they are failing. So this is India. Now some plots. This is showing the growth in the GMO crops. This is corn, soy, cotton. And then there's a corn and soy is this one. It's the average of the corn and the soy. And you can see looking at 1996, 1997, in the sort of 10-20% range, just barely starting. And then by 2011, 2012, we've got all of these up at 90% of the crops are GMO. So there's a huge change over the course of that decade in the amount of food that's GMO that's in our environment, in our food supply. This, I think, is a very interesting plot. And by the way, this is available from material that's available on the web, open web. This is percent of all herbicides. So this is looking at how much did herbicides change over time from 1991 to 2009, 2010. And so basically there was no change. You know, they're not using more herbicides now. And the same with the pesticides, it's pretty much flatlined. They're not really using more. But the big change is that they're using much more glyphosate than they used to. So they're switching in glyphosate and taking out something else. And this, to me, means that if people are getting sicker now and glyphosate is the one herbicide that's increasing, you might suspect that's the one that's causing people to get sick. This is a plot on the superweeds just to show that that's correct, what people are saying. Glyphosate, this is the number of glyphosate-resistant weeds in the red. And then the blue is the amount of glyphosate that was applied. So you apply more glyphosate, you get more resistant weeds, which makes sense. It's just like you get the antibiotic resistance in the germs. It's the same game. We're in a war against these weeds, and we're losing the war. That's what's happening. This is just showing the distribution of glyphosate usage in agriculture, and this is over the country. And you can see it's in this farm belt here where they produce all of the foods, the corn and the soy that go into the processed food industry. Tons of usage in there. And then, of course, the California. So it's all the agricultural areas. In terms of which products, corn and soy are the yellow and the green. So again, you can see huge increases in the amount specifically being applied to the corn and soy, which are the GMO crops. That's where the usage is really increasing. So, and this is sad to know, in 2011, U.S. approved genetically modified alfalfa. That's going to produce the hay for cattle and horses. So now the cattle and horses are getting exposed to lots of glyphosate, and they're getting sick. And this is something I hope to be able to study. I've hooked up with someone who knows about horses, and she's been interested in trying to figure out how we can study this. It's the fourth largest crop by acreage. I was really surprised by that. Behind these key other ones, corn, soybeans, and wheat. And so GMO alfalfa is Roundup ready, which means you're going to get all that Roundup in their food. This is a great quote by Professor Don Huber. I remember I mentioned him as the professor who gave the two-hour talk that caused me to be riveted and then to look into glyphosate deeply myself. When future historians write about our time, they're not going to write about the tons of chemicals that we did or did not apply. When it comes to glyphosate, they are going to write about our willingness to sacrifice our children and jeopardize our existence while threatening and jeopardizing the very basis of our existence, the sustainability of our agriculture. And I think this is really a great quote. The sustainability of our agriculture. That's the thing we really need to focus on, because if we can't fix that, you know, we're either going to starve or we're going to get killed by chemicals. This is a picture of two wheat crops. This one had been exposed to glyphosate for 10 years, and this one for only 1 year. You can see that it basically wrecks the soil, depletes the nutrients from the soil, and then the crops become sick, and they become weak, and they become less resistant to other pathogens that might come in and cause trouble. And so, in fact, new plant diseases is something that I heard about from Don Huber, which are driving down yields. There's this something called sudden death syndrome, which I think is very interesting in soy and goswilt and corn. We have a sudden death syndrome here in humans as well. And we have both an infant sudden death syndrome and an adult sudden death syndrome. And I'm wondering if there's a connection with those two. There might be. So this is associated with a strange new pathogen, which is similar in size to a medium-sized virus, and is a microfungal-like organism. So it's a very mysterious organism that's taking these things down. And it promotes disease in both plants and mammals, which is very rare. So a very exotic new organism that's causing a serious disorder. You can see that these plants are basically really destroyed by this bug. Here's a study that shows that glyphosate depletes nutrients, and this is... at less than 1/2 ounce of glyphosate per acre, which is 1/40th of the recommended rate. So a very tiny amount of glyphosate can cause a disruption in both root uptake and the transportation into the plant. So here's iron, manganese, and zinc without and with. And you can see here, for example, manganese is completely destroyed and zinc is really cut back. And zinc is actually, I think, in our paper we talk about zinc's importance for sulfate synthesis. So this is how you can get in trouble with a sulfate when you don't have enough zinc. And so a little bit less damage in the root uptake, but then it can't get through transport, which is the same problem that we see in human sulfate transport, for example. So here's a study of corn, GMO corn, and showing its comparison in nutrition with non-GMO corn for a bunch of different really essential micronutrients. And here's sulfur, which I'll get back to. Down here we have a couple of toxins, formaldehyde, which is produced by breaking down glyphosate. And so here you have 200 and zero. So you can guess that this corn is able to break down glyphosate, perhaps with this gene that it has, the GMO gene, and turn it into formaldehyde. And that might be why the mice know to avoid it. And then glyphosate itself that has a measurable amount of glyphosate in the GMO corn. And then all these nutrients are way down when you look at the numbers, especially sulfate, which is down from 42 to 3, sulfur. Down from 42 to 3. So that's where you're getting a severe deficiency in sulfur from the effect of the glyphosate on the plants. And the GMO in combination with the glyphosate. And so I had a correspondence with this guy, Jerry Brunetti, who's a soil expert. And he told me that sulfur is deficient in 90%+ of the soil samples that he reviews, no matter where they come from. Rainfall leaches sulfur out of the root zone in low humus soils, and the humus levels have dropped considerably following the industrial farming practices. So it's not just the glyphosate, but the whole way that they do the farming is depleting the humus, which is causing a loss of sulfur. And these commercial fertilizers used to be sulfated, but this is changing, so they're dropping it out of the fertilizers. And so adequate amounts of sulfur are needed for nitrogen fixing soil bacteria, which are also very important for the health of the soil. So all of this is just going to cause a lot of trouble. Here's a nice photo of a 1 square foot analysis of a public park near Cape Town, South Africa, with all these different plants and insects showing up in that 1 square foot of soil that was analyzed. Then when you look at GMO corn, this is what you get, a very, very depleted environment. You've got plenty of this corn, and you've just got a few ants and stuff. There's almost no life. And there's no green life except for the corn, 100% corn. Everything else has been killed off by the chemicals that have been applied. Desiccation is another thing that's been developing, being used more and more recently. They used to, for example, burn down sugarcane at the end of the season. Now they typically spray it with glyphosate, spray it with Roundup. And so this will hasten the maturity, offer weed control for next year. It reduces green material. These are all supposed advantages, and reduce the strain on harvesting machinery. But the disadvantages are the herbicide can't be washed out. It gets into the right before the harvest, so you're going to spray the glyphosate on the crop and then harvest the wheat. So you can imagine the wheat is going to have glyphosate in it. And then animals are fed these herbicide-treated crops, which gets into contamination in animal products, because they're going to probably put it into their milk, for example. You know, I mean, it's a way to get rid of it as far as the cow is concerned. So a lot of different crops. I was really surprised by all these fruits and wheat, barley, legumes, corn, soybeans, alfalfa, and sugarcane. All these crops are undergoing this practice of desiccation with glyphosate at the end of the season. This bee colony collapse syndrome, I imagine many of you have heard of this. It's a catastrophe happening worldwide. And in the U.S., especially the year 2006, you started to really see the bees dying in remarkable numbers. And that was when glyphosate was really being increased, the usage of glyphosate. I think it's a connection with the bee colony collapse that relates to the neonicotinoids. So the theory is that the neonicotinoids are killing the bees. These are an insecticide. But bees actually have a natural resistance to neonicotinoids, which involves these CYPE enzymes. So glyphosate is working together with the neonicotinoids to destroy the bees, to cause actually what I would call bee autism, by the glyphosate causing them to no longer be able to detoxify the neonicotinoids, and therefore they get they can no longer communicate, and they go off, and then they don't come back when they're done with their job. So, recapitulation, GMOs have resulted in greater pesticide use due to the emergence of these super weeds. Since 2000, these have all become dominant, the GMO forms, up to 90% of the crop today. And alongside that, glyphosate use has steadily risen. And this has resulted in the appearance of some strange new plant diseases like Goss wilt. It's depleted GMO corn in many nutrients, including sulfur, zinc, manganese, iron, and copper. The desiccation practice with glyphosate is causing increased burden of exposure, for example, in wheat. And so it may play a role in bee colony collapse syndrome due to its effect on their ability to metabolize neonicotinoids. Okay, some statistics. Here's GMO labeling. You can see that Europe and Asia are doing very, very well. Almost everybody has requires GMO labeling. Africa's got a few countries that are doing it. Australia's on board, all of Indonesia here, a lot of South America. And then here's North America, a complete blank. So not Canada, not Mexico, not U.S. And, of course, Roundup, it was developed at Monsanto. Its headquarters are in St. Louis, Missouri. So maybe that has something to do with it. It's, you know, we need to move towards at least labeling so people can choose not to buy it, know that they can be confident when they buy something that doesn't have the GMO crops. This is a study that also came out after our paper. We were really looking hard to find data on evidence that glyphosate is actually in humans. We clearly couldn't find any. We were very frustrated by that. No one seems to be measuring this. But this paper came out after we published. And it's very interesting. 182 urine samples from 18 European countries were analyzed for glyphosate. These were city dwellers. These weren't farmers. And they had never handled Roundup or any herbicides. So if they're getting it, they must be getting it from their food. 44% of the samples contained quantifiable amounts of glyphosate. I was really surprised by that number. And 7% had an amount that exceeded a safety reference that people have really kind of made up because they think it's completely safe anyway, so they don't really... Monsanto has been getting them to raise the safety limit by factors of 10 or even factors of 100. And the government doesn't even look at it. They say, oh, fine, you know, it's safe, so we'll just... More is showing up in the food, so let's just raise the level, the residue limit, and we'll solve that problem. So it looks like diet is the main source of their exposure, which therefore implies that it is in the food. And I think these numbers would be much worse if they were measured in the U.S., because we have so many more. We have all these GMO crops that we're growing and all this desiccation that we're doing. I would be very surprised if it's not a lot more in the U.S. But no one has measured it, as far as I can tell. So they have this nice quote, "Our testing highlights a serious lack of action by public authorities across Europe and indicates that this weed killer is being widely overused. Governments need to step up their monitoring and bring in urgent measures to reduce its use. This includes rejecting any genetically modified crops that would increase the use of glyphosate." So they're on board with that in Europe. They're doing a lot better than we're doing in terms of an awareness of the danger of this stuff. So here's a document that we found. We were looking for evidence of glyphosate in food, and we were having a really hard time finding any when we were writing our paper, again, because no one's looking. So this was a report by the USDA put out in 2011, a 195-page document. And in that entire document, they only tested one food item for glyphosate, which was soy. It's a good choice, because soy is definitely getting a lot of exposure. What they found is pretty disturbing. 271 out of 300 of the samples tested contained measurable amounts of glyphosate residues, 90 over 90%. And 287, which is 90 over 95%, contained AMPA, which is a breakdown product of glyphosate. So pretty much it's all over the soy. Now this is an amazing plot, and again, I got this after we wrote our paper. We got a lot of people sending us email and giving us information, and one of those people was Nancy Swanson. She is amazing, and I recommend that you go to her website. You go to the website where you can get the whole article that has a whole bunch of different plots that I'm going to show some more of them here in a moment. She's a physicist, and she was several years ago, she was getting really sick, and she started playing around with her diet and doing this and that, and finally she decided to go completely organic, and within 4 months she was completely healed, and then she was a believer. So she started as a physicist, she knows how to crunch numbers, and she got all kinds of data off the web and produced these plots, and they are truly amazing. This one is autism. So the red is glyphosate applied to corn and soy. Those are the core crops of the processed food industry, the red. And these yellows are the number of children with autism served by the IDEA. This is the kids that are diagnosed on the autism spectrum in the school system in the U.S. And it's almost a perfect match. It has a Pearson correlation coefficient of 0.99. You never see that. This means the correlation. 1.0 would be perfect. This is an amazing correlation between these two numbers. So the U.S. market is 25% of the world market of Roundup, which means we're getting exposed to tons more Roundup than other people are around the world. Here's some more plots from Nancy's data. And these are the same data, but displayed a different way. This is diabetes, and we talked in our paper about how Roundup would lead to diabetes. And here you have the raw data. And you can see there's sort of two trends. It's this slowly rising incidence of diabetes on this green line, and then there's something else that's causing it to go up much faster. So if you take the green line out, then you get this plot over here, which is then it's easier to see the direct correlation between percentage of GE, corn and soy, and the amount of glyphosate applied. So both of those are well correlated with the increase in diabetes in our country. Now here's a whole bunch more, and these are all a bunch of numbers, but she's got plots for all of these. And it's amazing because these are all conditions that we talked about in our paper. Diabetes, kidney disease, these are both kidney, autism, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia. We talked about all of these in our paper. We hadn't seen Nancy's data. And Nancy's data completely corroborate what we found because these correlations are all very high, not quite as high as the autism, which is dementia is 0.99 over here. And autism is 0.99. These p-values say what's the significance level. A p-value of 0.05 or less is considered significant, that this is a significant result. These things all have p-values that are extremely small. These E minus 007 means you put 6 zeros before that 9. So that looks like that. That's the p-value. 0.05 would be significant. You can see that it's extremely significant. And all these numbers are like that, several zeros after the decimal point before you get the first significant digit. So it's amazing to me that the evidence is so strong with the correlation between the Roundup and the GMOs and all of these diseases. Here's a plot on obesity I got out of a paper that was saying that sugar consumption might be causing obesity. And they looked back all the way back to 1700, going up to 2000. Now, I'm forgetting about the sugar consumption, although I suspect that the high fructose corn syrup probably has glyphosate in it. So it could be causing obesity because of the glyphosate that you're getting from that. But this is glyphosate, was introduced in 1975 right here. And notice this incredibly sharp corner at that time, when all of a sudden obesity rates started skyrocketing. And if you look back to 1960, you see all skinny people, you know, on the street. They're all thin. I mean, we've got so many people with huge obesity problems right now. I think it's directly tied to glyphosate exposure. Here's a plot of infant mortality. U.S. is doing very badly compared to peer nations. Our rate is over 2.5 times the rate in Japan and Sweden, which are among the best. And the divergence began in 1975. The introduction of glyphosate into the food chain. Here we are getting worse and worse and worse compared to the other ones, and I think the trend will continue for as long as we practice farming the way we're doing it today. So we're now proudly number 46 in infant mortality behind Cuba and Guam. So it's pretty amazing that those countries can do better than we can on infant mortality. And we're number one on infant mortality on the first day after you're born. So our children are born very fragile in this country. Number one among our peer nations, the industrial nations. This is an interesting plot of the changes in what people are dying of today. And a lot of diseases are actually going down. relative to Alzheimer's disease, which is now taking up a huge portion. I mean, it's really a growing problem, a very serious problem, because you don't just die of Alzheimer's disease. You're sick with it for many years. You're helpless. You require full-time care. It's not good to have something like that in your environment going on in your family. And I think that it has a lot in parallel with autism. I think Alzheimer's and autism are, in a sense, the same condition manifested in different age groups. So, recapitulation, North America is the only continent besides Antarctica with no GMO labeling. Glyphosate was detected in the urine in 44% of European population from the cities. There's a remarkable correlation between autism and, in the U.S. schools and glyphosate, and also many other diseases show a similar, very strong correlation. The gap in infant mortality rates in the U.S. compared to peer nations began with the introduction of glyphosate into the food chain. The obesity epidemic also coincides with the introduction of glyphosate, and Alzheimer's disease is on the rise, and glyphosate may play a role in that. Okay, endocrine disruption and cancer. More and more studies have revealed carcinogenic and endocrine-disrupting effects of Roundup at lower doses than those authorized for residues found in genetically modified organisms. This is, again, Dr. Nancy Swanson. Glyphosate is an endocrine disruptor that promotes breast cancer. A paper, again, that came out after our paper was published. We would have loved to have talked about this because we talked about breast cancer and we predicted that it would cause breast cancer, but we didn't have a paper like this to support it. Now we do. Low and environmentally relevant concentrations of glyphosate possess estrogenic activity. Now, people who have had breast cancer know that there's a form of breast cancer that's triggered by estrogen. And in fact, they can give you toxic drugs to interfere with the estrogen to try to help you fight the cancer. So this study looked at human hormone-dependent breast cancer cells grown in vitro. This is not in live in humans, it's in a petri dish. And they found that at parts per trillion concentration, that is a tiny amount of glyphosate, you got those cancer cells to start multiplying, which is what cancer cells do when tumors grow. So it's pretty easy to see that glyphosate is playing a role. 1 in 4 women in America today can be expected to face breast cancer at some point in their lives. And so this is mediated by estrogen receptors, and soybeans have a natural phytoestrogen that could be also contributing to breast cancer alongside the glyphosate that's in the soybeans. This was a study that was done by Seralini's team in France. This also got widespread distribution on the web and widespread criticism by the Monsanto cronies. They looked at rats. Instead of looking for 3 months, they looked for the whole life. They fed these rats foods containing Roundup at levels well below the established safety limits, but they got those foods their entire life containing Roundup. And they developed, the females developed massive mammary tumors. That's basically breast cancer in the rats. This is the conclusions from the study. The females had a greatly increased risk of breast cancer. The males had a significantly increased risk of tumors of the liver and kidney. Sex hormone disruption was occurring for both the males and the females. That's the endocrine disruption. Enhanced oxidative stress, is a huge problem in all kinds of different diseases today. Very significant kidney dysfunction. And then these effects did not show up at all until 4 months. This is the whole point about just looking for 3 months. Here's a study on liver cells, again, in vitro. This is just in the petri dish. Doses far below those used in agriculture kill liver cells when they're exposed to them in vitro. And it downregulated the synthesis of glutathione. Glutathione is a critical sulfur-containing metabolite in the body, really essential for antioxidant behavior. And it's low in autism. Critical for detoxifying environmental chemicals. That's another way you get in trouble with not being able to detoxify. And it upregulated the synthesis of these enzymes, which are being interfered with. So because the enzymes aren't working very well, the liver naturally starts turning up the gain on the production of those enzymes. And that's an indicator that glyphosate is disrupting these type enzymes. Dr. McCullough had a lovely... I like Dr. McCullough. I read his website a lot. I don't know if you people know Dr. McCullough, but I really recommend him. He's done a great job of... explaining how to be healthy. I really believe in everything, pretty much everything he says. And this was a story about glyphosate, and he says glyphosate is easily one of the world's most overlooked poisons. Birth defects in frog and chicken embryos occurred at 2 milligrams per kilogram, which is 10 times lower than the limit that's set by Europe. So it causes the endocrine disruption, DNA damage, developmental toxicity, neurotoxicity, reproductive toxicity, and cancer. And so the GMO crops soak up glyphosate so it can't be washed off. That's really an important point. You spray it on them. It used to be you had to just spray it on the weeds, because if you sprayed it on the plant would die. But these GMO plants don't die. So they'll just gladly soak it up, and it'll get into the food chain very nicely through that process. Recapitulation, glyphosate has carcinogenic and endocrine disrupting properties. Low concentrations induce estrogenic activity. Parts per trillion can induce tumor growth. Females fed glyphosate develop massive mammary tumors. Males have other tumor problems, kills liver cells, and it, in minute amounts, causes birth defects in frogs and chicken embryos. Okay, new GMO research. My saddest topic, in my opinion. Glyphosate-resistant weeds, we've said this already, due mainly to increasing use of GMO crops. And here, this paper talks about 8 weed species, but other papers talk about others, more than that. And so the solution is that you develop GMO crops that are resistant to other herbicides as well. I mean, it's amazing to me that you could possibly think this is the right path to take. You know, let's just add more resistance to something else and throw that in there in the mix as well. This is going to be, I can't imagine what this is going to do to our health. So here's a quote about the worry of this resistance problem. For controlling problematic weeds, the growers prefer increasing the magnitude and frequency of glyphosate applications. That's why we're getting more and more on our food. Or using other herbicides in addition to glyphosate, which is, again, a really scary thought. Or increasing their use of tillage. Now, what they want to do is say, well, if you're going to use other herbicides, you better make protection against those too. So, well, we've got our bioengineering stuff. We'll put some kind of bacterial gene in there that'll make it, you know, resistant to atrazine or to 2,4-D, you know, and then we can just put all these different chemicals on there and our plant will be perfectly healthy. I mean, that's the plan. I think it's demonic. Here's a picture of GMO research in Waimea, Kauai. As I said, I have a home in Kauai, my second home. I want to retire there. It's a beautiful island. I think it's been called America's most majestic island paradise. And I agree with that. I love Kauai. We went there many, many years ago for the first time with our children, and we vowed we wanted to come back to Kauai to retire. And it breaks my heart what's happening to this island. DuPont, Pioneer, Syngenta, Dow, and Bassifer all have programs in Kauai, in this area on the west side. And they're putting 99% of the restricted use pesticides that are used in Kauai agriculture is applied by these chemical companies to these crops that are not food crops. These are crops that are where they're developing GMOs to make them resistant to these pesticides that they're putting on them. So they've got a toxic soup of pesticides being poured on the land in western Kauai. This is a event, March in March, Poipu Beach, Kauai. I was there. This is me. And we had a great turnout. As you can see, I was very pleased. There's a lot of awareness over there of the dangers of GMOs. They're experiencing it firsthand. So here's a quote from this webpage. On Kauai, we have 12,400 acres owned by or leased to these companies for this testing. These lands are used for experimental crop trials for some of the most controversial technologies and chemicals of our time. These chemicals run off our lands into our streams and eventually pollute our oceans and leave a toxic residue for years to come. This is just a crime to do this to such a beautiful place, and not to mention what it's doing to the humans that are there. So this is another one that I found by Michael Schultz. This was in a local Kauai magazine. In order to determine whether or not these toxins may have a significant effect on a human environment, Monsanto and Dow must run their tests in a human environment. So basically, the U.S. government has said, you know what, we don't want these multiple GMOs. Good for them. They say, we don't trust it. You know, we think it might be bad on humans. You guys need to do more testing to prove to us that this stuff is safe. So where are they doing that testing? They're doing it in Kauai. Those are the people, only here. Kauai is that environment. That's where these companies are going to find out, by using these Kauai children as guinea pigs, whether or not these toxic chemicals are going to mess up these children's lives. I think it's a travesty. I mean, I'm actually totally shocked that that our country allows companies to simply pour all these toxic chemicals on these plots of land that are right next door to where children play. So here's Waimea, the world. Some of these fields are adjacent to public schools in Waimea. We went to the middle school, and there was an event there hosted by a couple of lawyers. They're involved in a lawsuit against Pioneer. It involves 60 families, mostly on two streets, who have suffered all kinds of health problems. This includes asthma, nosebleeds. The kids, we were told, almost all the kids have to bring in, inhalers, because they all have asthma. And nosebleeds, heavy bleeding among the women, miscarriages, and alarming cancer rates. So this is what we're all going to face once they get these products working, if we don't do something different. So this is what they're doing, 2,4-D, atrazine, glufosinate, dicamba. These are all other herbicides that are believed to be much more toxic than glyphosate. Glyphosate is not a restricted use toxin. These guys are. So if they're worse than glyphosate, and glyphosate is as bad as I'm telling you it is, I cannot imagine what's going to happen to people once they're getting all these toxic chemicals in their food. So it's going to be a global problem once we succeed in developing these demonic crops in Kauai. So impacts of genetically engineered crops on pesticide use. This is just a paper by Ben Brook, an excellent paper, and he's pointing out that as we try to solve this problem, we start adding corn and soybeans that are tolerant of 2,4-D. 2,4-D is Agent Orange. We used it, you know, to kill people in a war. So I can't believe we want to put this into our food system. And so it's going to drive herbicide use to jump by another 50%. And it's going to be a mixture of two herbicides. Whenever you mix two toxins together, they're always much worse than they would be working individually. This is always the case. We've studied many different combinations, and it's always the case. So, I mean, we're going to look to a very dismal future if we don't do something different. So, recapitulation, glyphosate resistance showing up in more and more frequently in weeds, due primarily to GMOs, causes steadily increased usage. New research in Kauai by multiple chemical companies is leading to GMO resistance, multiple GMO resistance to other herbicides on top of the Roundup Ready gene, or new Roundup Ready food crops besides the ones that are already in place. Chemical exposure to open air tests is leaving citizens of Waimea with diverse health problems, and if they succeed, we can expect our current health crisis to get much worse globally. That's my prediction. So, this is your food. This is your food on Roundup. Understand? I like this picture. Here's a picture of a typical fast food lunch. We've got wheat in the bread that's desiccated with Roundup. We've got GMO soy protein filler in the hamburger. We've got cheese coming from cows that were fed GMO corn and GMO soy. We've got potatoes desiccated with herbicides. We've got GMO canola oil, GMO high fructose corn syrup. In these two, I mean, it's pretty much all over. And the only thing in this picture that's probably safe is a tomato, because tomatoes are among the most sensitive plants to glyphosate injury. So if you put any glyphosate on a tomato, it'll die. So eat the tomatoes, but forget the rest of it. So this is our solution. It's the only path forward. This is a picture of a bunch of things in our house. My husband and I practice 100% organic when we buy foods. We're very fortunate to have the Harvest Market in Hanalei, in Kauai. We frequent that market. Here's some pictures of all the things we've been able to find that are organic, and we can eat well. You have to work at it today because there's so few organic choices. It'll be different in the future because other people are going to realize that we have to step up and we have to do this. Otherwise, we're going to face an intolerable situation. My hope is that Hawaii can be the leader, play a leadership role in the future to aggressively develop organic methods, to improve organic methods, make them more efficient, and even to blend that into the tourism industry. I've been to Costa Rica and Ecuador, and they have marvelous experiences you can do there as a tourist, where they educate you on how you can grow crops safely and organically and keep everything healthy, keep the soil bacteria healthy, and not poison all the streams and the oceans. I mean, it's a beautiful message, and I think we have to do it, and I think we can do it. And Hawaii is the place. You know, you guys, we have a lot of fertile soil here, but we import 85% of the food that we eat. I think that's crazy. So if we can get our organic, anybody who's a farmer, find a way to make your farm organic, and you will be rewarded. Because in the future, consumers are going to demand organic, and it's going to give you a higher price for your food, and you're going to feel good about what you're doing to help fix this enormous problem that we face right now in our entire food system. The entire system is on a path of destruction, and we have to turn that around, and we have to do that grassroots. Every individual can vote with their pocketbook by buying only organic food. Show that you care and motivate people to produce organic foods because you demand them. This is the way we can turn it around, and I think we have to. So, to my knowledge, no studies have been done assessing the effects of glyphosate on humans, although studies are happening right now in Waimea, if people will look at it. The U.S. government does minimal monitoring of glyphosate residues in foods, and so here's my summary. I believe we need to be very worried about glyphosate in the food and water supplies, its disruption of gut bacteria, depletion of essential amino acids and minerals, interference with cytochrome P450 enzymes have widespread consequences. 90% of the GMOs are engineered to be Roundup ready, and they are pervasive in the processed foods. More GMOs are on the way thanks to research here in Hawaii. Glyphosate may be the most important factor in the U.S. health crisis related to obesity, autism, Alzheimer's disease, and infant mortality, as well as many other things that we talked about in our paper. So, quote from Winston Churchill, want of foresight, unwillingness to act when action would be simple and effective, lack of clear thinking, confusion of counsel until the emergency comes, until self-preservation strikes its jarring gong. These are the features which constitute the endless repetition of history. And here's a cartoon just to make things a little lighter. The researcher says we are destroying Earth. And these government people say, oh, could you kindly rephrase that in equivocal, inaccurate, vague, self-serving, and roundabout terms that we can all understand. Here's an event, be there, around the world, Occupy Monsanto, Tuesday, September 17th. I'll be there. And thank you. Thank you for listening.